high, 87.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Oh yeah, welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with a plan, the Ed Man, here to give you some of the news for the past week. And you know, I don't think I hardly talked about Trump last week at all, so maybe I should kick things off with the news earlier this week, when MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell came out with a bombshell report, another Trump bombshell, and another Trump-Russia connection bombshell. I thought we were done with the whole, you know, Russian thing, but I guess they're not finished. I thought that, wasn't there a memo saying that we're moving on from the Russian thing and now we're moving on to Trump's racism? Oh, I'm sorry, that was the New York Times. Actually, I'm going to go to that story. So 2 weeks ago, the Slate published a transcript from an employee town hall. Now, this place I'm reading it from, the Washington Examiner, says that they suspect that the transcript was leaked in order to push the New York Times in a more anti-Trump, even more anti-Trump direction, like they can get any more anti-Trump. Now, the executive editor of the New York Times said recently, after the Mueller report, this is from the Washington Examiner, the paper had to shift the focus of its coverage from the Trump-Russia affair to the president's alleged racism. Quote, "We built our newsroom to cover one story and we did it truly well. Now we have to regroup and shift resources and emphasize to take on a different story." So he's talking about their Russian coverage, and they did it really well. And that's not true, because if they did it really well, they would have figured out that there was no link between the president and Russia and that there was no collusion there. But they didn't do the story well. This is a problem. But then came the Mueller report. Oh, let me give you a little bit more self-praise from this guy. Chapter one, this is another quote, of the story of Donald Trump, not only for our newsroom, but frankly for our readers, was, did Donald Trump have untoward relationships with the Russians? And was there obstruction of justice? That was a really hard story, by the way. Let's not forget that. We set ourselves up to cover that story. I'm going to say it. We won two Pulitzer Prizes covering that story, and I think we covered that story better than anybody else. Well, I know he didn't cover it better than anybody else, because there are some other news sources that actually got it right and figured that there was no collusion between Trump and Russia, but they didn't get it right. So they should take those Pulitzer Prizes and they should flush them down the toilet. I don't know. What are Pulitzer Prizes made of? They should burn them, because they don't deserve them. Now, the Washington Examiner continues, but then it came the Mueller report. And so I'm going to go back to the quotes here. The day Bob Mueller walked off that witness stand, this is the executive editor of the New York Times speaking, two things happened. Our readers who want Donald Trump to go away suddenly thought, holy S, Bob Mueller is not going to do it. And Donald Trump got a little emboldened politically, I think, because, you know, for obvious reasons, and I think that the story changed. A lot of the stuff we're talking about started to emerge like 6 or 7 weeks ago. We're a little tiny bit flat-footed. I mean, that's what happens when a story looks a certain way for 2 years, right? Looks a certain way. The story didn't look a certain way. The facts are the facts. They created the story to look a certain way. All right, so now I think we've got to change. The Times must write more deeply about the country, race, and other division. So in other words, go back to the same old, of just stirring the pot, making people upset at each other for no good reason. He continues here, I mean, the vision for coverage for the next 2 years is what I talked about earlier. How do we cover a guy who makes these kinds of remarks? How do we cover the world's reaction to him? How do we do that while continuing to cover his policies? How do we cover America that's become so divided by Donald Trump? You know, when Donald Trump says something, and then a newspaper reports it negatively a certain way, emphasizes misquotes, emphasizes false news stories, or puts out a completely wrong story, and then even if they retract it later on, everybody remembers that first initial story. I think it's the media that is dividing the country, not Trump and not what Trump is saying. If the media changed their emphasis like they did with Obama, I don't think that people would be upset with Trump at all. I think they would be very happy with him. And a lot of the vitriol that he puts out is a reaction to the energy that he's getting from these guys. I mean, if somebody says something terrible about you, Trump, he's a hothead, he's a jerk. I mean, really, he is, right? Donald Trump is not the greatest, probably, personality that we could have. But he does some great things, and he tells some great truths that nobody else does. So that's the New York Times there saying basically that they're going to switch away from Russia and move over to racism. So MSNBC apparently did not get the memo. And they're still stuck on Russia, I guess. Maybe. Maybe not. Because look, Lawrence O'Donnell is the one that put the story out. So here's a tweet that he put out on the 27th. Quote, a source close to Deutsche Bank says Trump's tax returns show he pays very little income tax, and more importantly, that his loans have Russian cosigners. If true, that explains every kind word Trump has ever said about Russia and Putin. Now, how do you jump from the fact that you have a Russian cosigner to that he's tied up with the government? Have you ever bought a house, right? Have you ever bought a car and you had an American bank co-sign it? Does that mean that you can let you know Obama or you know Trump and that you are an American conspirator? I mean, the leaps in logic here are insane. They're crazy. Lawrence O'Donnell is not right in the head, in my opinion. He is bananas. And then, of course, he has to retract the story. And when he retracts it, he said that if editorial standards were followed, in other words, if he did what he was supposed to do and followed the NBC, the parent company of NBC's editorial policies, that there would have been no problem. Which, to me, raises several questions. Number one, why is he doing that without following the policies? And the answer is because he's a hack, right? He just puts out what he thinks is going to get him the most listens, the most viewers, and he doesn't care about the truth. Or maybe what he cares about is a certain agenda, and he's pushing it. Maybe he's sincere in his hatred for Trump, hard as it might be to believe. And the reason I say that is because I can understand somebody not liking Donald Trump. But to go over the top like this and destroy your reputation, it's hard for me to believe that somebody could have that much hatred that they would hurt themselves over and over again. And I assume he's hurting himself. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he has more listeners than he would if he didn't say anything. I guess it's working for him. But I couldn't imagine saying such falsehoods and having to go time and again, having to retract them. You know, when I said years ago that this Russia story is a whole bunch of BS and to be proven right, I like that. I'm happy about that. When I tell you about the deep divide, would tell you about the deep divide in the Democrat Party between the progressives, the far leftists, and the establishment, the more moderates or I guess the right within the left, I'm happy about that. And now that story has come out and you know, that's a pretty well-known thing. But when I first started talking about it, it wasn't. But I got to ask, how does Lawrence O'Donnell do it every day? I mean, at least when a clown is looking at himself in the mirror, putting on the makeup, and goes on stage, at least he knows that if people laugh at him, then he succeeded in his job. He's doing it on purpose. But Lawrence O'Donnell is doing it by accident. That's got to wear on you mentally, man. It has to. Remember that video came out where he's mad about people next door hammering and, like, starts yelling and losing his mind? I mean, that's probably how he is all the time. He's probably just on edge because he knows that he's a fraud. Again, in my opinion, I mean, I'm not in that guy's head. Okay, I don't know what he's actually thinking. But if he's not sincere in what he's saying, he's got to be, it's just got to be eating him up, you know. So anyway, he apologized. He looked like a fool. It was a big story for a couple of days. And then I guess it's just back to the grind. Oh, speaking of making people laugh, I wanted to share this with you before I forget. So earlier this week, Kirsten Gillibrand dropped out. And really, I think that's just the best thing for everybody. So I'll play a quick clip of her dropout video. Just a little bit, though, because I ate before the show and I need to keep it down. Here it is.
Hey, everyone. I wanted you to hear it from me first. That after more than 8 incredible months, I'm ending my presidential campaign. I know this isn't the result we wanted.
It's the result we needed. Well, the one I needed. Wanted and needed, that result. So now that we're down one less Democrat, let's look at how Donald Trump reacted to this. This is a tweet that he put out August 28th. Quote, "A sad day for the Democrats. Kirsten Gillibrand has dropped out of the presidential primary. I'm glad they never found out that she was the one I was really afraid of." So guys, that is just incredible. That is, I don't know about 4D chess, but definitely his trolling is on the four-dimensional level. So this is, so I was wondering, you know, what are people saying about this? So I scroll down, and the very first comment I see is Christopher Zullo. And he writes, "I mean, do you seriously expect anyone with any semblance of intelligence to believe this? That's your problem. You play to the low." I mean, it's obviously a joke, right, guys? And this person's all bent out of shape about this. This is great. "That's your problem. You play to the lowest common denominator. You bring our country down by lying and manipulating your constituency so you can win to protect yourself. 2024 expiration." So a couple of things about this. First of all, nobody is taking him seriously. He's obviously, in a very petty way, and if you're going to call him out on how petty he's being here, but a very petty, although funny way, needling both Gillibrand and her people and anyone and just Democrats in general, obviously. And to come out and say, I mean, do you seriously expect anyone with any semblance of intelligence to believe this? I mean, is it me? Isn't that obvious he's joking? Yes, my girlfriend says yes. "That's your problem. You play to the lowest common denominator." How is that the lowest common denominator? The lowest common denominator would take him seriously, like this person is. It's the intelligent people who knows that he's obviously joking. Very obviously, he's afraid of Kirsten Gillibrand. Come on. I mean, out of all the Democrats in the field, he says, "I'm glad they never found out that she was the one I was really afraid of." And this guy's getting all mad about it. I mean, that's what trolling is, right? You say something ridiculous to get an angry, and you get an angry reaction out of it. You just needle people. And then at the end, this guy writes 2024 expiration. So he's already conceding 2020. He already admits that there's no way they can win in 2020. So really funny stuff from the Prez. And I mean, if nothing else, Hillary Clinton, we would not have gotten that from Hillary Clinton. In fact, Hillary Clinton's Twitter is funnier because of Donald Trump also. She's had a couple of good comebacks to him. And I think everybody knows that, quite frankly, she would not have had the guts to do it unless she saw that another politician could get away with saying, kind of outrageous things first. All right. Let's see. Another prediction came true. Tulsi Gabbard is not in the debates. I knew that they were going to keep her out. I knew they were going to come up with some BS reasons to keep her out. So the DNC, which has been proven to cheat in 2016, and I love it because anytime anyone brings it up, and it's usually the far left progressives, the Bernie bros, right? The people that wanted Bernie Sanders in there. Usually they're the ones that will bring up 2016 because they got screwed over hard by the establishment in 2016. The DNC straight out cheated them, provably cheated them. And, you know, I saw some tweets recently when they were blaming Susan Sarandon, of all people, for the loss of the 2016 election. I think that's just hilarious. And when the reason they lost in 2016, look, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. She almost won in just about any county. You know, Donald Trump won by a lot if you look at the counties, but if you look at the individual vote tallies in each county, it was pretty darn close. And that's why I hope that they don't get cocky for 2020. I hope that the Republicans realize how close that race actually was. The reason, in my opinion, that they lost was because they cheated Bernie Sanders, and his voters either sat it out, voted third party, or voted for Trump. And that's the real reason why Donald Trump won the election and Hillary Clinton lost. Well, instead of trying to be friends with those guys, they're accusing them again of losing it for them in 2016. You know, why would you go back to that, right? Why would you remind people of your bad behavior? And it's funny because anytime one of them says something like, well, remember, you guys cheated us, they'd be like, well, I don't want to relitigate 2016. Then suddenly that topic is off limits. We have to focus on beating Trump. Suddenly that topic is off limits. But anytime they want, the establishment is able to bring it up. But if one of the far leftists try to bring it up, then suddenly it's off limits. And I don't want any of the Democrats to get in. I completely disagree with, almost completely disagree with their philosophy. But the far leftists are getting cheated, and I don't like to see people getting cheated and screwed over. And that is what's happening to them. And now, good news for Trump, right? But this is happening again. And now Tulsi Gabbard is out of the debates. They're saying the reason is because she didn't have high enough polls. But what's funny is that the only polls that get counted are the ones that the DNC approves. And they're only approving the polls that give their candidates the higher numbers and give the leftist candidates lower numbers. Now, they also refuse to give an outline of what their process for choosing a poll is. So nobody knows how they choose their polls. I don't know if they know which polls they choose even. But see, again, the process is not transparent, so that they get a chance to pick their candidate. And we all know they want to pick Kamala Harris, but Tulsi Gabbard devastated her in that last debate. I've played that on the show before. Just destroyed her. Her polling numbers were cut in half as a result of that, at least in half. What's weird, though, is that Tulsi Gabbard's polling numbers didn't go up more than a very, very, very small amount, like 0.5%, you know, which I guess percentage-wise, that ain't bad. But, you know, Gabbard has raised enough money, and I think the reason why possibly her poll numbers didn't go up outside of, you know, conspiracy, is because there are already people running who out-left Tulsi Gabbard. So the progressives, as much as they like Tulsi, are going to go for Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, who's becoming increasingly more establishment, but still far left enough and popular enough and winnable enough that they would probably go for one of those two. Now, Joe Biden, in the polls, he's still a monster in the polls, but everybody knows that he's a gaffe machine. Everybody knows. I mean, they're writing articles about him being a gaffe machine. I was just looking at an article. Let's see if I can pull this up. But it was really funny because the headline, I think they changed it, but the original headline was This is from the intelligence, New York Intelligencer. It says, should we cover Biden's gaffes? Trump's lies are far worse. I mean, that's an unbiased headline, right? I mean, that instantly you know that this is a reliable news source that I can trust to give me unbiased news, right? Jeez. But I don't know anything about that site. Maybe they are leftists and they love it and they're very clear about it. I mean, you know, it's not like when the New York Times or the Washington Post or, you know, CNN or any of these guys who claim to be neutral are biased. So Joe Biden has made a number of gaffes. I played the clips, but I'm running out of time, so I just want to go over them really quick. And one, he forgot Obama's name. Okay. Well, I mean, it's live speaking, so I guess I could understand temporarily forgetting it and just wanting to get on with your sentence. So it might have been that case. I don't know. Another one, he forgot what state he was in. So, I mean, you're traveling all over the place. I could kind of understand that, too. And then the third one, he just got every single detail wrong. He told this crazy story about how he's pinning a medal on a dude, and the dude was like, I don't want that medal because the person I was, one of the people under my charge died. And he told the story very emotionally. And then he says at the end, and that's my word, God's truth, giving my word as a Biden. And plagiarizing Biden, I don't know if that counts for anything, his word, but he gave it. And then it turns out that all these details are incorrect. And I'm being kind by saying these things. And gaffes, the far left, it says that we shouldn't call them gaffes, that these are serious cognitive issues that Biden is having, and they're calling it elderly abuse. So they're really trying to make Joe Biden out to be this you know, declining, aging dude is not fit to be running for president. But they have no problem with Bernie Sanders. We'll see how that turns out. Now, Kamala Harris has been really acting up. So her supporters got together. They're at this I don't know what the event was, all right, but there's all these Democrat speakers. So Kamala Harris goes on and she says her piece and her supporters are there and they are chanting Kamala and they're doing this rhyme. I can't remember what it is, but you know, with these stupid rhymes. And then they get up as Bernie is coming on. They're still saying their rhyme. They get up and they walk outside and they walk outside the place that Bernie is speaking. So that's pretty rude. Not only to say your chant as he comes out instead of applauding and listening to what he has to say, but then to stand up and walk out is extremely rude. But then, now here's the thing, they stand outside of the room that they're in, but they're still chanting. So during Bernie's speech, you're hearing their chant pretty loudly. I don't know, those walls must have been made of paper or something. Maybe the doors were open. I don't know. But you can clearly hear them chanting while Bernie Sanders is speaking. So it's kind of war, right? I mean, they are being really, really crummy. Now, if you look at the Twitter of some of these followers, one of them said something along the lines of, boy, that was genius. Whoever thought of that, you know, kudos to him, right? The response is the campaign really knows what it's doing. So to me, as an outsider, not knowing the inside details of these things, to me, that means that that campaign is running some dirty tricks here to be able to go in there and tell their supporters, hey, you're going to chant over Bernie, and then when he starts talking, you're going to get up, still chanting, walk outside the room, but still chant loudly enough that they can't hear what Bernie Sanders has to say. And that sounds par for the course, to try to shut out other voices. Heck, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is being sued right now because she is blocking Twitter users. And it's funny because she was speaking out loudly against Donald Trump when Donald Trump blocked people on his private account, by the way. And then, of course, a federal court said that he's not able to do that and that he has to let everybody speak because even though it is his personal account, he is a public figure representing a government, a branch of the government, and so you can't lock people out for that. Whereas Ocasio-Cortez is now using the same defense that he had used and is in fact saying that she doesn't have to because they're not her constituents, even though her votes affect everybody. So typical leftist hypocrisy. I gotta go. I'm the Ed Man. This is the How to Kill an Hour radio show. Be safe. Watch out for hurricanes. See ya.